The following is a pre-recorded program.
Friends, we never need to be afraid of the truth.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown here. We are going to have a special broadcast today. Get ready to be equipped and strengthened and encouraged in the truth, infused with courage. When you know the truth, you can stand strong. I won't be taking calls. Let me tell you where we're going today. I'm going to share some really important information that I think will help you in your spiritual walk, will help you mentally, emotionally as well, to know how to handle and navigate certain difficult waters that we're in today, and really that the church has always been challenged with. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to take you into a previously recorded interview that I did at the Institution for Creation Research Museum in Dallas, Texas. I was absolutely blown away by that. Everyone listening on K-Word 100.7 FM in the greater DFW area, you've got to get over there and check the place out. I was stunned by the quality of what's there. Whether you're a Bible teacher, whether you're a pastor, whether you're a homeschooling mom with kids 12 and 10, whoever you are, if you're interested in the Bible and truth, you'll find it amazingly, amazingly well done. Whether you're young earth, old earth, you'll find it amazingly well done. So we're going to go there. And then Institute for Creation Research is doing a special event in Phoenix. So all of our friends listening on KPXQ. How do I get there on KPXQ? Yes, 1360 AM. In Phoenix, I want to encourage you to find out about this event with the Institute for Creation Research. It's going to be in Phoenix, October 12th to 14th. So you can find out about it by going to icr.org. icr.org. And again, the event in Phoenix. So all of our friends in Greater Phoenix, October 12th to 14th. Something you don't want to miss. Okay. All right. There is an increasing attack these days on the Bible, on the truth of the faith. There are many people, quote, deconstructing. I wrote a whole book recently on why so many Christians have left the faith and asked the question, is deconstructionism good? Or in other words, is it good to ask lots of questions and wonder, how do I know what I believe is true? How do I know what I've been taught is true? Is it healthy? Is it unhealthy? It's happening a lot, and for many it's unhealthy, as they're concluding that the Bible's not true, or what they heard about Jesus is not true, or the spiritual truths they grew up with are not true, that they were thought to be true, but they're not. And there's a tendency when this happens to either get defensive or to kind of just pull together in a little echo chambers and just not hear anything contrary because it's negative and builds doubt and creates fear. What I want to encourage you to do is have no fear of truth. The truth always liberates. When you hear something bad, right? Let's just say you go to a doctor and he gives you the truth and it's not what you want to hear. At least you know how to respond to it. You're not living in denial any longer. When Nancy will come, when I'll ask her to check out something I've written and give me input, and she's like, you know, marked up this whole paragraph or this has to go. Okay, on my flesh, I don't like it, but it's for the best. It's for the best. All I want is to follow the truth. I don't want to follow myths. I don't want to follow fables. I don't want to follow things that just make me feel good now and then come to find out they're all false. No, I would hope neither do you. Is that right? Let's close our eyes and feel good. No, I want truth. So I want to share from my own background, from my own journey. And this does tie in with Institute for Creation Research. It ties in with our friends at Reasons to Believe. It ties in with creation.com, you know, different scientific websites, whether they are young earth, old earth. It ties in with the fact that there are learned scientists. There are people highly respected in their fields. And with recognized PhDs from respected universities, and some of them who've published respected peer review articles or written respected books, and they are saying, we don't have to fear science. where science is accurate, where science has right information, it's not a threat to us. So can I share some of my own experience and background? Many of you know I came to faith in 1971, the end of 1971, as a heroin-shooting, LSD-using, long-haired hippie rock drummer. Yeah, that was me, called Drug Bear, Iron Man, because of my crazy, abusive lifestyle and massive drug use. The Lord radically, wonderfully transforms me, saves me, and now my dad sees this is real. He sees something's really happened to me since I started going to this little church. And he says, Michael, I'm glad you're off drugs, but we're Jews. We don't believe this. So he brings me to meet the local rabbi. Now, remember, at this point, I've read the Bible just a drop. And at that, I've read it in English, the King James. The little Hebrew that I learned at my bar mitzvah, I've virtually forgotten. Even if I remembered all of it, it would be zero. It would be less than zero compared to talking to a learned rabbi. Here was a rabbi, probably about 27. He was a young man fresh out of Jewish Theological Seminary and a brilliant man. So immediately we're having these talks that are way over my head, but I'm doing my best to go back and forth based on what I've learned and understood. And now he's giving me stuff to read. He's bringing me to meet professors, rabbis, different ones, because he was so interested in getting me to, he saw tremendous potential in me. He thought that I could be a great Jewish thinker. And just was jealous for me as a Jew to be faithful to our traditions and looked at what I had done as a traitor to the faith. Not he knew I didn't know better. In other words, I was raised in a fairly nominal environment. The synagogue there was fairly nominal. I didn't have a strong Jewish background. And it's not like I said, I'm forsaking my Judaism. I barely knew Judaism. So in his mind, I was what rabbinic literature refers to as a tinok shenish be'ah, a child that's born in captivity. So I didn't know any better, but now he was going to enlighten me and bring me back to our traditions, as a good rabbi would do. Well, I don't have answers for these rabbis. I know Jesus has changed my life. I didn't even know, you know, Jewish roots and Yeshua and all the messianic prophecies. I'm brand new. I'm newly saved, all right? So now I'm reading the Bible more and more, I'm praying more and more, I'm studying more and more, but still just in the context of not a lot of academic study, mainly just in the Word, praying. And by the time I'm saved a year, I'm spending 3 hours a day in the Word and 3 hours a day in prayer, at least. And I would read the Word 2 hours a day, and then I would memorize Scripture 1 hour a day, and God sharpened my mind and gave me focus. I used to memorize 20 verses every single day. And if I was talking to someone with Jehovah's Witnesses, like a machine gun, I could decimate their arguments. I didn't always have wisdom or compassion, but boy, I could decimate arguments. Some other cult, you raised an issue about the Bible, I had all the verses. Well, now I meet with these ultra-Orthodox rabbis, a group called Chabad, based in Brooklyn. They're now the world's largest world Jewish movement. And I meet with these two rabbis, and they seem just as spiritual as I am, and they talk about prayer and devotion to God and loving God, and they pray and study all day, and they're not just quoting verses in English, they're quoting them in Hebrew, and when they want to show me how my translation, they said, oh, those English translations are terrible. They go, here, look at the Hebrew, and they're showing me letter for letter, and I feel like a little child now, right? Not someone who's read through the Bible 4 or 5 times and memorized maybe 4,000 verses. I feel like a little child because I can't read the Hebrew. And even though I knew what the Lord did in my life was real, you don't want to turn your brain off. You don't want to deny factual evidence. You don't just want to say, well, praise the Lord, he's God. Well, maybe you don't have an answer to something and you know that the Lord has changed your life, but at a certain point, you want your mind and your spirit in harmony. You want to love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength. You don't want to turn your brain off. I mean, that's a dangerous thing to do. So I knew I needed to study more. I knew I needed answers. And I honestly went to God. He's my witness. He alone can verify the sincerity of my heart. I knew that being a Jew was important in God's sight. And I knew that he was real. And by default, because I knew the Bible was real, I knew the Old Testament was real, but they were challenging me on the New Testament. They were challenging me on Jesus being the Messiah. So I made a determination. God, I have to follow you as a loyal Jew. Whatever that means, whatever the cost, whatever the consequence, if it means egg on my face and shame and having to say I've been wrong about all my beliefs about Jesus, which I didn't think was the case. But if that's what it meant, if following the truth and obeying God meant denying Jesus, well, I had to do that. But if what I believed is true, and Jesus really was Messiah and Lord, then following God and being obedient Jew would mean taking the reproach of the Jewish community and being rejected and being called public enemy number one by an Orthodox rabbi years ago and by being shunned because of my faith. If that's what it took, so be it. I embraced it. And what happened was God opened his word to me. It's like it exploded off the pages, the word, the written word, jumping at me, shouting at me that Jesus was the Messiah. And then, so now I'm in college and I'm majoring in Hebrew, and then I'm getting a master's and PhD in Near Eastern Languages and Literatures, all with the goal of being able to read the text for myself, all with the goal of not having to just rely on a commentary or a dictionary, that I could study, that I could dig, that I could know the background, that I could, when someone challenged me, that I could be able to answer. Now, you can't do that for everything, but you can specialize in certain areas. So that's why I did. Now, of course, I really got into it. I enjoyed the studies, and it even became a bit of an idol in my life. Instead of being a tool, it became a real idol, and I had to reorient that so it would be a tool that undergirded what I was doing as opposed to an idol that I had to attain or be something or be somebody. But here's the thing. The more I studied, the more I learned, the more I followed the truth, and I did my best to follow it wherever it led. In other words, saying, that's a big question. That's a serious question. That's a great objection, and I don't have an answer for it. Oh, yeah, but this commentary says this, and this apologetics book says that. Nah, those answers don't satisfy me. I can't give a cheap answer. And I'd say, all right, I'm just going to think about it and have it as a question mark, because I knew the rest of my faith solid, strong, immovable, unshakable. It's like, that's a good question. And then maybe a month later, sometimes the next day, sometimes a year later, it's like, oh, there it is. There's the insight. Boom. And then I would share it with others. The light would go on. Boom. So instead of the truth hurting me, the truth strengthened me. Instead of my questions leading me away from God, they deepen my faith in God. And I know some of you say, well, it's been the opposite for me. Maybe you need to keep studying. Maybe you need to keep digging. Maybe you've listened to sources, skeptical, mocking, critical, that haven't given you the full picture. Have you listened to both sides carefully? That's all I can ask. Have you heard the responses to the critics, to the skeptics? And then have you got on your face and said, God, if you're really there, I have to know, because nothing is more important than that.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Tribute Wellness. I want you to hear an amazing testimony from my friend, James Robison, and most all of you will know of him. He and his wife, Betty, host the Life Today television program. Now, here is James.
Let me tell you about a miracle I experienced. My friend, Michael Ellison, he and his wife are our 40-year-plus best friends. Well, let me just say this to you. I had so much pain with what was called tennis elbow that I could hardly reach over and pick up the phone without pain, without it hurting me. I couldn't pick up something to drink, a glass of tea or anything. It was very difficult to do anything without wearing a tight strap. And then Michael shared the Nopal cactus juice with me, Nopalea. I began drinking about that much in the morning in a glass and that much later in the day. And in 3 months, I was a different person. I have now gone more than 10 years with no pain. Not better, well, I have no joint pain. I'm telling you, it did something to the inflammation in my body that was undeniable. Now, that's just my testimony. But that's been more than 10 years with no pain. Matter of fact, if I miss, for some foolish reason, a few days, I can feel it creeping back that fast. So give it a try. See if it helps relieve your pain. I hope it does, like it has mine. Because it worked for me.
Nopalea is supported by clinical studies for lowering inflammation and improving mobility, flexibility, and range of motion in the neck, back, and joints for less reliance on pain medication and improved quality of life. Call 800-771-5584 and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order goes to support the Line of Fire. Call 800-771-5584 or go online to trivita.com.
You need help.
You need some help.
It's a phrase that people often use these days as a subtle insult.
You need some help, dude.
You need help.
The strange thing about it is that we should not be insulted at all. The reality of the human condition is that we all really do need help. Help from those around us, and mostly God's help. Jesus even said to his followers that he was the vine and we are the branches. Apart from him, we can do nothing. That's pretty helpless. In another place in the Bible, it says, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. So the Bible's pretty clear. God sees that we are pretty helpless without him. But we spend much of our lives fighting against that reality, thinking that we are very self-sufficient. That is, until we have some rude awakening that reminds us that apart from God, we are pretty helpless. And only those who do realize they need help are the ones on the right track. So, the next time someone says,
you need help,
you can say without any shame at all,
God is right. I do need help.
The Truth Network.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So yes, you've been hearing my dear friend James Robison talk about the effects of nopalea. It is no joke. If you caught the Monday show with Dr. Paul Burnett, chronic inflammation is the world's number one killer. And here's something you can do every day, not just to deal with arthritis and other conditions like that, but just make an investment in your body for the long term. And at the same time, support the Line of Fire broadcast. How's that? So call 800-771-5584, 800-771-5584, and you will get the best discount that you can, and you'll know that your funds are helping us reach more and more people, help getting the church healthy, so we can complete our mission, spirit, soul, and body. You can also go to the Trivita website, trivita.com, trivita.com. Make sure you use the code BROWN25. That will make sure funds are donated to the Line of Fire, and it'll make sure you get the best discount. Trivita.com, BROWN25. Okay, so let me talk to you about science, because we're going to transition in a moment to an interview with Dr. Randy Galizza from the Institute for Creation Research Museum in Dallas. So, and again, all of our friends listening in Greater Phoenix, the event is October 12th to 14th. Creation Mega is what it's called. All the info is on icr.org. Just you scroll down, you'll find it, icr.org. They've really told me it's going to be a special event. So they're bringing the big guns out on the road. Is it even going to be someone from Babylon Bee there? Yeah, the satirist. So anyway, if you're in that area, be sure to go. And just tuning in, listening in DFW area, check out icr.org. Visit there yourself. You won't be disappointed. You really won't be disappointed. Okay, so what about scientific objections? I had to deal with Jewish objections to the Bible. And then when all my classes at Queens College and then at NYU, all my classes were taught by professors who didn't believe what I believe. Some were secular, just, you know, not religious. Some were hostile atheists. Some were more religious Jews. They had a wide range of background. The head of the department at NYU, when I was sitting there, Dr. Francis Peters was a former Jesuit priest who is now married with children and was no longer a Jesuit. My main mentor and professor, Professor Baruch Levine, was a former Orthodox rabbi. So, and then one of my dissertation readers, Professor Larry Schiffman, one of the great scholars of the Dead Sea Scrolls and early Judaism. So I studied with people. Some of them didn't believe the Bible in any sense was God's word, just another history book with a lot of error in it. So I got hit from every angle, and it could be challenging. But I said, I've just got to dig. I have to keep digging and looking for truthful answers. Now, when it comes to scientific objections to the Bible or the objections of evolution, never touched me. Never, ever touched me. You say, why? Okay, so in high school, when you start to get to more serious classes of science and stuff like that, I was getting high. So ages 14 to 16, I was getting high a lot and really didn't pay attention to class a lot and would cut classes when I could. And I mean, I have almost no memory of being in classes because my memory is pretty fogged. Then I protest along with a number of other students. I was just at my 50th anniversary reunion. I've referenced that earlier in the week, but I was just at my 50th anniversary high school reunion this past Saturday and reminiscing with some of the folks there about what was called safe school. West Hempstead High School in the late 60s, early to mid 70s, it stood for student and faculty education because it was going to be a learning experience for everybody. This was in the days of protest movements and college buildings being taken hostage by radical hippies and yippies and whatever. And so we protested. We didn't like the rules at the school. They were too strict. And I was one of the ringleaders helping foment this thing. And it ends up that the school says, well, make all your demands known and have them circulated to the entire school by tomorrow, and we'll work with you. Well, somehow we were able to do it. It was before the days of, you know, just copy machines. So you had this, I don't know what it was called, but like this ink roll, and you just let you make copies. And folks in the psychology department, like some of us, so they work with us, and I help put together with others, here are our demands for the school. It was like no formal classes, no formal grades, no formal requirements. And they gave it to us. For some reason, they gave it to us with four teachers who were pretty radical. One may have been a driving force that helped us get it through for whatever reason. So everybody went to school at the same time. The main school of, say, 1,150 students, whatever it was, they got out at 3 in the afternoon. Safe school with like 60 or so students, we got out at noon. And the whole school, all the windows, all clean except the four rooms that we had at the end of one building, all with graffiti. Right? This seriously actually happened. And I had no formal grades the last 2 years of high school. No formal grades except band and orchestra. That was the one class I took in the main part of the building. So I got number grades for that. But everything else was pass-fail. That's all I got for my last 2 years. Yeah, seriously. And you could attend class or not. You could request a passing grade if you didn't attend. I mean, it was pretty wild. And you know, some of the faculty more radical than others. And I got saved right at the beginning of this. And now I have hours every day to pray and read the word and witness. Every day sharing the gospel with someone new. And people, you know, in those days of the 60s, the whole counterculture revolution, people seeking, searching. There's a big spiritual search going on. And so I got to share the gospel that first year. About 40 different people came to a church service with me. A few actually came to faith, but about 40 different ones came to a church service. Because we said, oh, you got to come check this out. It was the environment then. And so I had no science classes the last 2 years of high school. So the 2 years before that, I don't remember any of the content of the science classes. The 2 years after that, I had no science classes. And then when I went to college, I didn't take any science classes in college. So I was never at a formative thinking stage of my life or as a believer confronted with the challenges of science and the challenges of Darwinian evolution. It was very surprising when, 15, 20 years ago, I surveyed a bunch of ministry school students and I asked them how many of them at some point in their life had lost their faith or been deeply challenged in their faith, either high school, college, because of evolution, and a lot of them raised their hands. So I, to this day, I don't know a lot about science. Now, I could give you a great presentation about intelligent design and God creating the universe and certain arguments. I'd give you a great opening presentation for about 5 minutes, but if anyone tried to pick it apart, I don't have the ammunition to respond because it's not my field. So I've relied on others. I'm going to dig into the Hebrew text. I'm going to do my best to understand what Genesis 1 is about, what God's trying to convey to us. I'm going to do my best to look at alleged contradictions in accounts and things like that. Hey, friends, Dr. Michael Brown here. Do you remember when people thought I was crazy when I said it's not too late for America, that God can still do something in our country, that there is going to be a pushback, a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution? And do you remember when people thought that you were crazy because you felt the same way, because you believed what I was saying and already felt it in your heart? Well, friends, that pushback is here. The gospel-based moral and cultural revolution we've been talking about for 25 years is unfolding, and we are right in the thick of it. And the Line of Fire broadcast is divinely positioned for such a time as this. Friends, you would be so gratified and blessed as I hear, if you could hear what I hear, testimony after testimony as leaders, young people, old people, moms, dads, students, people from all backgrounds come up to me and say, Dr. Brown, you're providing a template for us. You're providing a blueprint for us. You're showing us how to do this, how to have hearts of compassion, backbones of steel. But friends, it's a joint effort. We do this together, and with your support, we can amplify this broadcast around the nation and amplify this voice to shake the nation. Join our support team today. Become a torchbearer with a dollar or more per day. Here's the number to call to sign up, 800-538-5275. That's 800-538-5275, or go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. and become a monthly supporter. Click on Donate Monthly Support. I want to immediately give you two classic books, Compassionate Father or Consuming Fire, Who is the God of the Old Testament, and Revolution, which will really show you what it means to be a Jesus follower today. Plus, you get free access to our online classes and so much more. Sign up today. AskDrBrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am sitting here. It's been an amazing day. I'm sitting in Dallas, Texas at the Institute for Creation Research Museum with Dr. Randy DeLuza, who's the president. Been on The Line of Fire with me, but we're sitting in your studios here and recording this while I'm down in Dallas. So welcome back to The Line of Fire.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for coming down.
Yeah, so we have a mutual friend, Dr. Mark Stengler, who was voted Doctor of the Decade recently, best doctor in California, naturopathic doctor, well-known, dear friend of both of ours, but a board member here.
Yes.
And he's been saying, Mike, you need to get down and see the Creation Museum. So I've been eager to do it, but when I'm here on a regular basis in the DFW area, normally once a month, when I'm here, I'm busy teaching and ministering. So he was with his wife and two of his kids with us in Israel in May on a tour. And while there, we locked in a day, okay, we're going to make it work. So I pre-recorded my show for the day that we're here. And I want to be totally candid with you. He was telling me to go, I'm really going to like it. I'm shocked. I'm blown away. I had not the slightest clue that it was on the level that it is, the museum here. And everybody, if you're listening, folks, on K-Word 100.7 FM, our great station at Blankets DFW, you need to get out here. We'll tell you more in a moment. So this is a pretty expensive setup here.
Oh, you bet. This was a big outreach by the Institute here. Tens of millions of dollars went into constructing this facility. So it's a world-class facility. It's very, very attractive in many ways. I think it's as attractive as any of the secular places you could go.
Yeah, and in fact, more attractive than many secular places I've gone. I remember as a kid going to the great museums, growing up in New York City, Long Island, growing into the great museums there, and you had, you know, the giant fossil reconstructions, you know, and the dinosaurs, or like when there was a World Fair in New York, near where Shea Stadium was, and you go on these animated tours and all this, and this is what the place is here.
Yep,
I mean,
it is.
Just give me an idea of some of the animations you have.
Well, we take you on a complete tour through the Bible in many ways, and off to the one side, we have a completely separate area of planetarium shows, and these are planetarium shows about the ocean, about the solar system and other things, and it immerses you in that planetarium experience.
Planetarium itself is like a multi-million-dollar project.
Oh, yes, it was. And even the programs are hundreds of thousands of dollars to put together a planetarium show.
So we went in. I took in a few minutes with the one on the ocean. Like, can I just stay here the rest of the day and watch these? So I can't imagine what the solar system one must be with the full. I mean, you sit there, you get reclining chairs, right?
You bet, yeah.
Okay, so that's all right. The planetarium,
and then you turn in, and we have a wonderful little history of men of science, men of God. And if I tell you, it'll ruin the surprise.
I've never in my life seen that. Yeah. I mean, on that level, I imagine it exists, but I won't reveal the secret either. But who are some of the men, the great scientists?
All the great scientists there. Yeah. Louis Pasteur, a great microbiologist, demonstrated without a doubt that life only comes from life. Robert Boyle, another wonderful physicist. Obviously, Isaac Newton, world famous physicist. Kepler. I mean, they're there, and you got
portraits of
them. Wonderful portraits, yeah, great portraits.
And maybe something else.
Oh, you bet.
Okay, so that was, I'm sitting there. Again, I only get to be in there for a little while, so I wanted to stay a whole lot longer. You know, sometimes museums, and I've been in them, you want to kind of move through quickly.
Right, exactly.
Or it's just a lot of information. You sit and you read, and you sit and you read. If you're really interested, there's a lot to learn. And I have to say, I was invited to a creation museum in another state by a dear brother, loves the Lord, great scientist, and he put this thing together. And I think there's a lot of information for people that know science, a lot of information. But I kind of thought, this is it?
Yeah.
So I honestly didn't know what to expect when I got here, which is why, again, it's off the professionalism, but it's engaging.
It is. It's supposed to be engaging.
Incredibly engaging.
Right. Draw you in and be interactive. It's not just something you're just going to be a passive passenger going through where it just speaks at you. Our Discovery Center is meant to draw people in, engage their mind, engage all of their senses, pull them in, sights, sounds, everything along those lines. So I'm very pleased that it worked for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the only thing that didn't work was that I have to come back and spend a day or two going through everything, you know. But I wanted to get the feel, the glimpse. So, I mean, we're talking about, if you're talking about dinosaurs or a woolly mammoth, I don't just have to imagine what the woolly mammoth might have looked like.
No, it's right there. And you don't have to imagine what it looked like. We have a cool theater. That's all I'll say. It's a cool, there's a clue, theater that talks about the Ice Age, which sets woolly mammoth in the context, what they were, how they had adapted to their environment around them. They were actually programmed to do that, to live in this particular environment right from the very beginning. And people can see what one looks like. If you had the time, you could actually reach over and touch one of those. And then I think I can just say this. I think we have the world's best replica of Grand Canyon. It's a scale model, and it is really, really good to see. I've been to the Grand Canyon. They have something like it, and our Grand Canyon replica is better than the Grand Canyon replica at the Grand Canyon.
Mm. And having been to the Grand Canyon, it's so stunning. I remember being there, I think it was around 1995. It was my second time there. I'd been there previously as a boy, maybe around 11. And when I stood there and looked out, I thought the only legitimate response is worship. It's so stunning and majestic. So as I'm doing my whirlwind tour of things, so I have the benefit of one of your staff members who happens to have a PhD in geology to explain the significance of the rock formation. So, why Grand Canyon? What's so big about that?
Well, Grand Canyon is a testament to a worldwide flood. You see massive layers stacked right on top of each other with no evidence of time in between, capturing literally billions and billions of fossils in processes which aren't happening today. They're not even close to happening today. And another thing that you can see in our museum is the research that we're doing on borehole logs, which can demonstrate and document that you find some of these same layers in the same relative position on every continent on the planet.
Mm. So it was being pointed out to me, because everybody that knows my background knows I'm not a scientist or geologist, any of this, that, okay, there's allegedly, between this layer and this layer 160 million years, but none of the signs that there's no erosion, there's no...
That's right. No erosion in between any of these layers at all. So if you expected to find missing time, you'd expect to find soil, branches, trees, all of those kinds of things, which normally would collect on the ground over a long period of time. What you find is you find a straight line on that layer, no matter where you go, where those layers are in the world, that's what you'll find. So no evidence of millions of years of missing time.
Mm. And there's another room that I went in, and you've got a giant globe just blank in the middle. So the world before creation is shapeless mass. And then this giant screen, and God said, let there be light. And so it's Genesis 1 kind of animated.
Animated, yeah, that is a cool exhibit. People have to see it to really appreciate that. And that's really based on our borehole log research as well. So whenever someone's looking for oil, they drill into the ground, they look for oil. There's a geologist actually logging the materials that are coming out of that. What are these layers? What type of layers on that? And thousands of these are all over the world. Believe it or not, none of the major research institutes have ever taken and tried to correlate all of the borehole log information from around the world and put it all together. And this has been a major project by us, and years of research to pull all of this together. And what the globe is actually showing you, which we can document, is the progress of the worldwide flood as it is covering continents, and continents are being split apart during that time. Mm. It's not conjecture. It's based on real analysis.
So what's interesting is even our friends who are old Earth creationists still have to deal with the question of a worldwide flood. In other words, even if they don't interpret it the same way that you would, they still have to deal with all the objections to a worldwide flood and why it couldn't have happened and volumes of water and Noah and the
right.
Ark and all of that. So regardless of someone's background, I just tell them, regardless of where you stand, first, if you don't believe the Bible's true, by all means, come here. If you do believe the Bible's true in young Earth creationists, you're going to be blown away.
Right.
If you believe the word's true, you're an old Earth creationist, you're going to learn a tremendous amount and be edified. So everybody,
right.
all backgrounds, you're going to benefit.
You're going to benefit. You'll be edified.
You'll be absolutely edified and given a whole lot to think about, whatever your position, and entertained.
Right.
I mean, I actually painted a dinosaur, hit send, and there it came up. It wasn't the world's best painting, but I put stripes on I picked the dinosaur. I want to put stripes, pressed a button. And then you got the sand things. There's a mother with her little boy playing in the sand. But the boy's playing.
All there together, yeah. Great point. You know, a lot of people think museums are just for older people, but we really have put a lot of effort into engage the minds of the young people. So the sand thing, people are trying to imagine it. It actually allows you to create terrain with a computer projected image onto the sand.
It's wild. And there's the Noah's Ark exhibit. You get an idea of what things may have looked like.
That's right.
And question for Rabbi Nachum, were there dinosaurs on the Ark? So that's a whole other.
That's a lot.
Let people come in. Okay, so where are you located?
We are here in Dallas, Texas, on the north edge of the city limits of Dallas, almost at the juncture, if someone's looking at a map, of two major interstates where they cross the 635, which goes around the city, the 35, which goes north and south through it. Right there, you can't miss us.
And what are your hours of operation?
We are open from Tuesdays through Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. during that time.
And so do folks need to make reservations when they come? Can they just show up?
No, they don't need to make reservations. We try to control the flow of people. I would recommend that you go online and you purchase your tickets, you buy your tickets, you reserve those tickets. It'll ask you, what time do you want to be there? If you're interested in a planetarium show, what time do you want to see that show? Do all of that in advance. You'll save time.
And the website?
icr.org/discoverycenter. Or if you just go into our main webpage, icr.org, you'll get all the information on Discovery Center, plus a lot of information.
So no hype. I'm not saying this because Dr. Stengler encouraged me to come. I'm not saying this because I'm sitting here. God is my witness. I cannot wait to come back, take in some of the shows, and get a whole bunch of other people. Yeah, seriously, I am shocked, blown away, thrilled, excited. And just wish I had more time.
Wow.
And I don't know where I want to start. Maybe in the planetarium. Just sit back I want to bring my wife to look at the solar system. This is just mind-boggling stuff. So, folks, ICR.org. You need to come visit the Discovery Center.
This is Michael Ellison, founder of Trivita Wellness. I want you to hear an amazing testimony from my friend, James Robison, and most all of you will know of him. He and his wife, Betty, host the Life Today television program. Now, here is James.
Let me tell you about a miracle I experienced. My friend, Michael Ellison, he and his wife are our 40-year-plus best friends. Well, let me just say this to you. I had so much pain with what was called tennis elbow that I could hardly reach over and pick up the phone without pain, without it hurting me. I couldn't pick up something to drink, a glass of tea or anything. It was very difficult to do anything without wearing a tight strap. And then Michael shared the Nopal cactus juice with me, Nopalea. I began drinking about that much in the morning in a glass and that much later in the day. And in 3 months, I was a different person. I have now gone more than 10 years with no pain. Not better, well, I have no joint pain. I'm telling you, it did something to the inflammation in my body that was undeniable. Now, that's just my testimony. But that's been more than 10 years with no pain. Matter of fact, if I miss for some foolish reason a few days, I can feel it creeping back that fast. So give it a try. See if it helps relieve your pain. I hope it does like it has mine, because it worked for me.
Nopalea is supported by clinical studies for lowering inflammation and improving mobility, flexibility, and range of motion in the neck, back, and joints for less reliance on pain medication and improved quality of life. Call 800-771-5584 and use promo code BROWN25 to receive 25% off your order. As a new customer, 100% of your order goes to support the Line of Fire. Call 800-771-5584 or go online to Trivita.com.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview. And again, if you live anywhere in the DFW area, even a few hours away, it's really worth traveling over to the Institute for Creation Research Museum in Dallas. You can find out about it at icr.org. I really want to bring Nancy down. She loves to study and learn about the cosmos, learn about the universe. Something about it just gives her such awe of God and a sense of his majesty. It's so beyond our ability to grasp. That's part of what makes it so extraordinarily fascinating. And as scientists like Einstein have observed, the miracle of the universe is that it's observable, meaning it you can calculate and it operates on mathematical precision. It's like, how in the world could that happen? So it's really worth a visit. The planetarium, I watched a few of these nice reclining chairs. And I think they've got three major shows or films that are each about 30 minutes. And you just lay back and watch it on the roof, the screen there. And the one I watched was just, it was underwater one. I'm like, can I watch the rest? But we had a limited schedule in the midst of my day there. But a couple on the stars and the universe. And so worth your time. And then again, if you're in Phoenix area, some of you listening live right now on our great Phoenix station, so icr.org and check out the event that's coming your way in just a few weeks. All right. I want to read a scripture to you. As I encourage you today, don't fear the truth. Don't fear the truth. And for some that I'm speaking to right now, before I read these verses, you are going through it. You're really struggling. Is it just God true? Is the Bible true? Or did Jesus really rise from the dead? Man, that's torture when you're not sure, isn't it? The few times, it's been very rare. I go through other attacks and trials, but a fundamental attack on my faith has been very rare over the decades. I'm grateful for that. But the few times it happens, it's completely paralyzing. It's like the utter kick to your gut and takes your breath away. You don't know what to believe. If you don't have faith, I mean, what do you, it's just, this aimlessness and this almost a fear of, oh no, what if it's not real? Some of you are going through that right now. And maybe you just flipped on the broadcast or came across the podcast. You don't even know who I am, but it's God speaking to you. It's his way of saying, hey, this is real. Reminds me of a story, Salt Lake City, Utah, if I'm correct, on the station that we're on there, a great station that we've been on many, many years. And there was a woman depressed after losing a loved one, just going through a dark time, feeling abandoned by God. And her cat happens to press a button that flips the radio on, and it's the station that we're on, bringing gospel comfort. And it was just what the woman needed to hear because the cat accidentally stepped on something. So maybe it's not just an accident or coincidence that you tuned in. But let me read this to you. Apollos, a Jewish man, comes to faith, eloquent, mighty in the scriptures. It says in Acts 18:27, when Apollos wanted to go to Achaia, the brothers and sisters encouraged him and wrote to the disciples there to welcome him. When he arrived, he was a great help to those who by grace had believed. For he vigorously refuted his Jewish opponents in public debate, proving from the scriptures that Jesus was the Messiah. So notice this. He was a great help to those who by grace had believed, for he vigorously refuted his Jewish opponents in public debate, proving from the scriptures that Jesus was the Messiah. Seeing this happen was of great encouragement to the Jewish believers. I've shared this before, but let me share it again. It was the early 2000s. I did my first debate with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach. We've probably done 20 plus debates since then, many face-to-face, some on radio, some on TV, in the midst of which we become dear friends. I mean, legitimately, heart-to-heart, dear friends. Now, if you've ever seen like a boxing match or a combat sport where the guys are punching each other in the face and they're all bloodied afterwards, they hug and like, yeah, good show, man. And, well, that's kind of how the debates are. I mean, we don't pull any punches, and Shmuley can be pretty aggressive, and then afterwards we'll have a lovely meal together and heart-to-heart talk. But we are genuinely dear friends. Well, that was not the case in the first debate. It was after that. Shmuley, to his credit, did reach out to me, and then we got to know each other, and then we became friends. But he was not happy with me that first night, because here I am, this leading missionary to the Jewish people. What could be worse than that? And what had happened was Shmuley had been on Larry King. David Brickner from Jews for Jesus was on, some others, and Shmuley was challenging them, and he wanted to challenge David to debates across America. Now, David's absolutely confident in his faith, but he's not a public debater in terms of his primary calling. And this Jewish believer in New York City said to, it was a friend of Shmuley, and said, you need to debate our gladiator, by which he meant me. Well, God had called me to write books on answering Jewish objections to Jesus and to debate rabbis, and at that time, there were very few of us in our camp that were doing that. There were learned Messianic Jews who died in the Holocaust, and very few after that were putting out material. But there was nothing out there when I came to faith and got bombarded, and God called me to provide the materials and make stuff available and to do the debates. And I realized, so Shmuley, of course, agreed to do the debate, and it was an incredible environment. Last minute, the location we're going to use was changed, this Jewish location. Suddenly they needed the room. We ended up in another location, standing room only. Actually, there were like 300 people who couldn't get in. Religious Jews, secular Jews, Christians, Messianic Jews. It was an amazing setting. So Shmuley went after me very aggressively, and by God's grace, I responded strongly, and it was we felt it was a good night overall. We were unable to release the initial tapes because there was, at that point, Shmuley didn't know me, and there was no history, no relationship, so he just wanted this to be a live event, even though it was recorded, to not be released or distributor or anything like that. You know, that was the agreement beforehand. In any case, what happened that night, I watched it with my own eyes. I could see when I came out that Messianic Jews were looking to me to do well, that they were looking to me to rebut this well-known rabbi, this very, very eloquent rabbi. And if I could do that, then it was so faith-building for them. You know, it's like Manny Pacquiao, one of the greatest boxers of all time, and then became a committed Christian along the way, and was a senator, actually ran for prime minister or president of the Philippines. but was, you know, senator and so beloved there that basically the whole nation, or literally over half the people in the nation, will watch one of his boxing matches when he fights. And it's normally said that crime stops. Even the criminals stop to watch his fights. And when he fights, he feels like he's carrying the people of the Philippines on his own shoulders. Now, he's given away hundreds of millions of dollars to help needy Filipinos and so on. But he feels as if he's carrying it. Or, you know, you'll have like World Cup football. What World Cup calls football, we call soccer. And it'll be Argentina versus Germany. And it's the nation is, you know, how does a team, that's the nation. That's for the whole nation. So that was the sense that this was not just for me, this was for our people, for Messianic Jews. And it had that effect of giving confidence. It had that effect of giving strength. And friends, I want you to know, whatever area you're in, if you're getting bombarded by the faith, can we really trust the New Testament texts? I mean, are they reliable? Well, there are brilliant scholars like Daniel Wallace who've been in this inside out, and who could show, yeah, it's highly, highly reliable. My friend Dr. James White's devoted so much time to it. Yeah, it's highly, highly reliable. Or you're getting hit with philosophical issues, or just, you know, the confrontation of the college campuses. But boy, my friend Dr. Frank Turek, he's on campuses all the time, and when he presents, you know, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, his arguments are winning arguments. Or William Lane Craig, you know, and his philosophical brilliance, or J.P. Moreland, the people are there. And then when it comes to scientific objections, again, even if you're not even sure, old Earth, young Earth, the answers, the science, there's so much information. You don't have to be afraid. Contradictions within the Bible, they've been answered. And the ones where it's like, I'm not quite sure how those line up, they're inconsequential overall. And if we had all the original manuscripts, a lot of things would just fall into place. Or if we could have been there to piece the events together, it's like, ah, they seem to be contradictory, but actually they work in harmony. You don't have to stick your head in the sand. You don't have to cower. Those who are in the midst of deconstructing, and I don't know, I could, Dr. Brown, maybe that's your journey, but it's not mine. Would you just take time to say, well, God, if you're really there, would you help me be on the path of truth, because I want to follow truth? And if what I used to believe about you is true, then I want to follow you and serve you with all my heart. But if it's not true, I don't want to live in a fantasy world. I don't want to deceive myself. Whether you're getting hit with objections from rabbis, we've got the answers. Whether you know objections from Islam, the answers are out there. So many fine apologists to the Islamic people, and on it goes. You don't have to fear the truth. Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 13:8, we can do nothing against the truth, but for the truth. And those of you who believe in what we're doing, you know by God's grace that we are on the front lines making a difference. You know that we are touching lives. And you would be so encouraged to see some of the testimonies that come our way. And people saying, I lost my faith and came back to the faith through your video. Especially those who got pulled away by counter-missionary rabbis like Tovia Singer. And then, you know, it sounds intimidating, but then they watched our stuff or they read our stuff. It's like, and we make so much of it available for free. And it's like, oh, thank God. Now I see the error in what he was saying. I see this is the truth. Stand with us. Partner with us. A dollar or more per day makes you a torchbearer. Gets you on the front lines together with us and gives you access to lots of exclusive material that you don't have to pay for, that we just pour back into you. Call 800-538-5275. Say, I'd like to be a torchbearer. 800-538-5275, or go to askdrbrown.org, click on Donate Monthly Support. Together, we're making a difference.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.